Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
It's the Luke and Pete Show. Welcome to the Luke and Pete Show. I'm Pete Donaldson. I'm joined by Mr. Luke Moore. I do hope what I just said did not end up on the recording, because to be quite frank, you just can't trust me to edit a show these days. Yeah. We're so busy at the moment, aren't we? We're kind of coming out of lockdown. Some of our shows have been recorded remotely. Some of them have been recorded in the room. It's all very confusing. You've got letters to send out, Luke. Well wishes. Well wishings. All kinds of stuff.
I mean, the stuff you said before we recorded there, I would like to distance myself from it, but no more than I'd like to distance myself from everything.
From
you
everything
say.
Else.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, for me, you're business right. as usual.
Exactly. Take anything that I say out of context, and I'm in trouble, quite frankly.
Well, it's difficult because it's never in context, is it, really?
No.
It's just an endless stream of thoughts.
I think people give me a lot more rope than I really should be afforded, I think, in many ways.
Well, that was the working title of this show, wasn't it? When we first sort of thought about it, the working title was just "Give Pete enough rope."
Ruin.
Let's see what happens.
I would say that let's get Peter cancelled because he deserves it. The things he's done in his life, he deserves. People don't need to listen to his nonsense, to be quite frank. How are you doing, Luke? Have you had a good weekend? What have you been up to, mate?
I'm not bad, thanks. Yeah, I had an okay weekend. Had a quite relaxed one Saturday. Finished my book, which is good. Yesterday, went to a friend's house. Went for a walk with him and his wife and his kids, and then went back to theirs for a delicious barbecued dinner. And then today I'm back at it again. The weekends go so fast. But I'm all right. And I think also, Pete, you've got nothing to worry about because you are as close to uncancellable as possible, I think.
What do you mean?
I just think you just can't be held down. You can't be killed by conventional means. You're like Lemmy or Keith Richards. Yeah. Well, Lemmy was famously killed. He died. He wasn't killed.
Well,
but you know
died.
What I mean?
I mean, does that count as a killing?
Probably
an
not.
Extrajudicial killing? Killing Lemmy? I think it probably does, to be honest, the way that he treated his body with all that speed.
Yeah.
Goodness me.
Do you think you'll outlive Keith Richards?
I genuinely don't think I will. Isn't that terrible? I'm sort of looking at it going, yeah, no, I don't think, because people go, oh, the stuff that he did to his body, it's incredible that he lived that long.
Are we talking about you or Keith Richards, sorry?
Keith Richards. Yeah, Keith Richards. I would say that, like, Keith Richards, he has looked like shit for the best part of his life. So, like, it's not like he's looked like ever green. You know what I mean? It's not like he's looked like this beautiful kind of, like, timeless beauty. He's looked like absolute dog shit for the last 50 years.
No, I think he looked great in the 70s. And then
he
and
still
then,
looked like Keith Richards, though. He still looked all haggard.
Yeah, I know what you mean. In this book, I think it is, where he says that five separate doctors have told him that if he doesn't change his ways, he's going to die. And he's been to all of their funerals. And I was thinking, who goes to their doctor's funeral?
That?
That's weird.
Why are you doing that, Keith? You bloody weirdo.
My second thought after that was, are you obliged to go to your doctor's funeral? Because I've missed loads. If that's the case, I feel really bad about that.
I can't really sort of... Dr. Nirmal was my first sort of doctor who isolated my asthma problem and pretty much saved my life, to be quite frank. I don't know whether she's still around.
Give her some props, man. We can name an episode after her if you want.
Dr. Nirmal from Hartlepool. I don't know where she is now. I know she was part of some kind of very interesting religious sect.
We've got a very special surprise for you. We haven't. She's not here.
We haven't. I've got a little something for you. Okay. I did something for the first time ever this weekend.
Is this pot noodle related?
Powerful. No. I put some cheese. Yeah, we'll come on to that in a pot noodle. Yeah. Well, I put some cheese coleslaw in a pot noodle. It's a fine thing to do. My loved one puts cheese in pot noodles, and it's weird, but I've adopted it. As a new thing to do, and it's brilliant.
It's just too depressing.
Why is that too depressing?
I can't. My brain can't process it. I can't categorize it, and it's a category error.
It's a category error.
So when you talk about the things that your other half has brought to your relationship, the first thing that springs to mind is they introduced you the idea of putting cheese into pot noodles, and you carried it on by changing that to cheese coleslaw.
Yeah, well, I didn't even know that cheese coleslaw existed, so it just seems to be a lot of cheese and a lot of cream.
Peter, you're a man of means. You don't need to be doing this.
Cheese coleslaw. But it makes the juice, the ramen juice all sort of creamy. It's brilliant.
Oh, it's horrible. It's horrible.
Get yourself some cheese coleslaw.
No.
Get yourself some cheese coleslaw. Mix it in with a chicken pot noodle. King size if you can make it.
Sorry, everyone.
It's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about your weird anger, the way I treat my body.
I'm the weird one here.
And the black tar heroin.
That's for pain relief and everyone listening knows it.
Oh, I got a bad back. Oh, and I got a bad stomach. Yeah. So he's got a bad stomach. He's got to have heroin. You don't have to have heroin. I'm sure there are better things I used a pressure washer for the first time.
Oh, yes.
In my life. And
tell us
I
more.
Feel powerful. I was at a garden party. Somebody dropped a bottle of gear and it smashed everywhere on the floor. And my friend Alex gave me his pressure washer to have a go on the pressure washer. And then I got really excited and started spraying the pressure washer water up in the air. It went on the food. People weren't happy. People sort of found it funny, and then they saw where the water was going and just sort of frowned a bit. So I'd like to apologise to everyone at the garden party.
Are you the person in? Are you there in the capacity there as this person who helps run the company that runs your friend's podcast?
Which
makes it funnier.
Why does that make it funnier?
Because it's like, oh, how's the podcast going? Yeah, it's going really well. Yeah, I make it with that guy. What, that guy over there? who's soaking wet in all his clothes with a pressure washer over the food.
It was good. I sprayed water everywhere.
Do you know what's really disappointing about a pressure washer is that when you get to distance, it's got no power. So if you fire a power washer at someone from we're in that scenario.
You've got a fire hose.
I'm just saying, you fired that pressure washer at me, but I was 10 feet away. I'm hardly yet even getting wet. It's so disappointing.
No, it is.
It's a range weapon. But
I just like the fact that it was just so powerful and the trigger felt like a gun, and it was kind of early on in the party. I mean, if it happened later on, I mean, you know, people might have been a bit more into the fun of it, but, you know, I could have fired it at the giant Jenga. The bloke from the bloke from Twilight turned up. Who, what's his name? Patterson. He could have seen me do some pressure washing. That would have been fun.
I mean,
he's the new Batman. He might use it as one of his weapons.
What I'd like to have seen is Robert Pattinson to walk into a party, and I'm the first thing he's
everyone.
Seen is you firing your own toenails off with a pressure washer. Oi, have you seen this? Oi,
oi, you.
Batman.
Blood vampire man. Vampire.
Yeah.
Oh, you'd like it if it was filled with blood, you prick. Oh,
I'd like it if every single time he tried to go and get a drink from the kitchen, you walked up to him and said, oh, sorry, we haven't got any blood left. Every single time.
I bet he's experienced that a lot, to be honest.
From you, I expect.
I'd hate to be that well known. Christ. Especially when men walk around with pressure washers in their hands.
I like him. That we spend a lot of our time on this show just talking about inanities and weird stories we've thought about, or we'll talk about Nalgene's for 10 minutes, and then you'll just throw in there unannounced that you're at a party with Robert Pattinson this weekend. It's a nice thing for people. It's a nice little Easter egg.
Don't know the guy, never met him before, didn't say hello, but I guess it's a bit of colour from the weekend that you wouldn't usually get.
Is he a fellow asthmatic?
I don't know, let's fire some water at pressure at him. Before we head off onto a break, I've got something very important to play you. Over the weekend, something big happened in the world of video games. I know you like a little update every now and again, but this one's going to be a quite short one. A load of secret data got found on some Nintendo servers and was released WikiLeaks style onto the internet. Now, Nintendo are famously very secretive about their content, about their IP, about the stuff that they make and how they make their video games. But somehow somebody has managed to get hold of some very obscure and strange bits of Nintendo history. And Nintendo fanboys and fangirls are so obsessive with the minutiae of how their games are made that this has really set the internet alight. But the funniest part of it for me was somebody has found an original copy or original version ROM of Mario 64 on the Nintendo 64, where they hadn't recorded Charles Martinet, the voice of Mario, his vocal bits yet. So they've just taken bits out of other cartoons. So Super Mario genuinely sounds a little bit mad. These are some of the noises that Mario 64 would have made if Charles Martinet hadn't come on as vocal talent.
Yeah! No! Oh!
It's the no. I don't like.
Do the no again.
Hang on.
Yeah! No!
No! No! No!
I love the idea of a kid playing Super Mario 64 and then being like, hang on a minute. Is that my dad?
No.
That's so strange, isn't it? That, by the way, that game is my wife's favourite game of all time. It's certainly one of my favourite games of all time. I'd love to get... Is there a situation available to me where I could buy a perfect condition N64 with all the stuff I need and all the games? Is that still possible?
Yeah, but I mean, just don't bother. Just buy something different. just buy a little emulator thing. A little emulator box. You already bought.
No, but if I want to recapture my youth go chest deep in the situation that my life is never going to be as good again, I'd like to do it that way. Is that available?
That would be very, very easy to do, yes.
But, is it not expensive, though?
£100 for the all-in, if not cheaper.
They're not even still making them anymore. How's that possible?
Well, you just buy them on eBay, don't you? Because they were very popular. They were a mass market video game system, weren't they? And Mario 64, that was the game, wasn't it? It came free with it. I think it came free with loads of them, didn't it? So, yeah, you could indeed very cheaply and very easily manage your nostalgia.
How do you feel about this idea? Because, for example, if I was talking to my sister about this a while back, about the house that we grew up in. I think it came up for sale. I was driving past it a while back and it was up for sale. And I was like, I said to my sister, we should go and look around it.
Prospective tenants. Nice.
Yeah, but then we decided against it because I just thought, do you know what? It's probably going to be a bit shit. And I remember it being great. And now I'm a lot bigger physically. And so I just think it might be, it might just completely ruin the kind of memory. And that's the thing with N64. If someone offered me one, I'd definitely take one. And I'd take Mario 64 and I'd take GoldenEye and I'd play them. And I'd be worried that after about 10 minutes, it would be, oh, this is a bit shit. You know what I mean?
It will be a bit shit. It will be a bit. It's always a bit shit. But just get it for Switch. It'll be re-released on the Switch fairly soon, no doubt.
You reckon?
Remember how rubbish it is? Yeah, definitely.
They need to release GoldenEye on that bad boy as well.
They don't though, because that's rubbish as well. People forget it's rubbish. I never played it back in the day. It's all of that rubbish. It's just rubbish.
Well, because you think everyone's expectations has moved on to such an extent that it won't be worth it.
Well, I was on the football on my WhatsApp group and I was talking about my love for the video game, the old Police Quest video games. Did I mention this in last week's Luke and Peach?
No, I think so, no.
Where it was sponsored, or rather every time you fucked up in the game, a policeman would be sat on the front bonnet of a police car giving you advice about how you could have gone a little bit better, you know, read the Miranda rights correctly or done a traffic stop in a better way, or caught the murderer a little bit easier by following the clues. This guy's name escapes me now, but he, Daryl something or other.
Oh, yeah, I do remember this.
And I was like, I wonder who this Daryl Gates is. That's his name. Daryl Gates would give you advice after every level, whether you've done well or done madly on this Police Quest 4 game and 5 as well, I think. Turns out he was this massive racist police chief who was fired after the Rodney King beatings, and then he just went into a cushy little licensing deal with Sierra and made video games under the Police Quest moniker. And I was like, who is this respectable kind of guy, police chief, sponsored by Police Chief Daryl Gates, made in conjunction with Police Chief Daryl Gates? How did he manage to swing this job? Unbelievable.
and he was given it after this all happened.
I believe this was like a post retirement gig. If it wasn't, he still had some very, very not even less than progressive, just some awful views about black people. It's so weird. But we fed this and we don't question it because we're kids. And same with, I was talking on WrestleMe about Mavis Beacon, you know, the typing lady. She was just a figurehead. She didn't actually exist.
Who is she?
The lady on the... She used to teach people how to type. Mavis Beacon, I think, and it's pronounced. Back in the day, when kids and typists were learning to type, she could teach you to touch type using games. You know, like little like the gamification of learning.
Oh, I'm just looking at it now. Yeah,
and it turns out this beautiful kind of African American woman on the front cover, who was Mavis Beacon. It was just a model that the developers just found in like a model's kind of catalog, I suppose, and went, "Yeah, she'll do."
I mean, that's slightly different, isn't it?
What do you mean?
Slightly different situation to Big Daryl.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, massively. I'm just saying that as a kid, I thought that Mavis Beacon was a real person.
Because next thing you'll be telling me the Colonel doesn't cook all the chicken at KFC.
Exactly. So you just get told these not lies, but just kind of like you think one thing is one. This police chief is a respectable police chief who's got the rights to tell you. I mean, he probably does know the rules behind a Miranda rights and a perfect traffic stop. It's more of the.
I don't think Daryl's traffic stops were that good. I'm not an expert.
He does very specific ones. Let's put it that way.
Also,
very specific traffic stops.
I understand why you're bringing this up and why you're pointing it out, but I don't want, because this is the thin end of the wedge. The thick end of the wedge is you tearing into McDonald's, running around the kitchen unsupervised, screaming that you want your burger cooked by Ronald McDonald and no one else.
Yeah, but marketing is a thing. Hamburglar, so I'd be part of it.
You were dressed as a hamburger at that party at the weekend, weren't you?
I was a pressure washer. Very enjoyable. I am looking forward to owning a pressure washer in my future.
I've got one.
Oh.
There we go.
I've got one other sound effect other than Super Mario going, no!
That is what it sounds like.
Is that what it sounds like? When you attach the hose?
Yeah. Some people just come around to my back garden and go, why is that guy playing the drum kit in the... Oh, it's a pressure washer.
It's a pressure washer. I think he sucked up some pebbles. Oh, yeah, yeah. Right. We'll be back in a second with some emails. We are going to read some out this week. We sometimes are a little bit lax, and we managed to get two out before we have to chip off.
That's the tagline of this show. We sometimes are a little bit lax.
All right. We'll be back in a second.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Jack Mate's Happy Hour is back for a brand new season. It's the podcast where we talk to some of the most exciting people in the world, from Ricky Gervais.
In some ways, fame makes you a better person. You know, it's like, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in God's watching me, but I know someone with
everyone else's.
To undercover police officers.
Can you see the fading scar there, gentlemen?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I,
yeah.
That's where I was stabbed in the neck by a drug dealer once.
Or we just talk about whatever's making us laugh right now.
When you think back to school kid banter, like, it's well funny because of how immature it is. We had this teacher called Mr. McGibbon, and he had this big cushion that he was teaching us how to rugby tackle on. He just ran up to it, rugby tackled it, but landed on top of it, and one of the kids shouted, "It's not your wife, sir."
That is funny.
Listen to Jack Mate's Happy Hour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Jack Mate's Happy Hour is a Stakhanov production.
And we're back. It's the Luke and Pete Show. If you want to get in touch with the show, how can people get in touch with the show, Luke, at the Luke and Pete Show?
I've just come to the local McDonald's and we're normally just sat in there with a Happy Meal each. Pete goes, Pete, burger, sometimes nuggets, me, carrot crunchies, loads of fries and two fruit shoots. So, hello@lukeandpeteshow.com is the email address. You always email in your droves. We absolutely love hearing from you. Even some of the emails that we receive that aren't suitable for the show, are invariably very enjoyable to read. So thank you very much for that. And when I say that they're not suitable for the show, what I mean by that is you can't email in fully naming someone in your town that you think's a paedophile. For example,
no,
we can't read
that. We're
not
that kind of sure.
No, and we wouldn't anyway. And you also can't say that, you know, your teacher, Mr. So-and-so, once beat you up, or that you had the idea first for, you know, the iPod.
Facebook.
Do you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
All that kind of stuff. It doesn't make the cut, but we still enjoy reading it because it makes us feel part of a similar community.
If you've got a story about a fruit shoot, let us know, all right?
Absolutely.
It would be an excellent game you could play with a pressure washer. Right.
Everyone knows that it was Pete who actually invented the iPod. So don't take that away from him.
I've opened up a few in my time. William Darby has got in touch. I hope he's not going to suddenly say, don't say my second name. Will in Beijing. Will in Beijing. Good day, gentlemen. I hope that you're both doing well. And I'm getting too burned out by the amount of podcasting you've been doing, technically, in the quarantine, lockdown, whatever state everyone is in the moment. I'm probably a bit late to the party on this one, but I was listening to the mathematical argument for how many holes there are in a straw. So I thought I'd try and answer the question from a linguistics perspective.
Oh, God.
Really, William? Really? Yeah. Imagine you get a straw for your beverage. You put it in your drink. You slurp up the goodness. No problem. Your friend, meanwhile, has a defective straw. Tries to slurp up the goodness, but the drink comes out of a small, round gap in the wall of the straw.
I hate that.
Your friend will most likely... Yeah, that is a pain in the bum. Your friend will most likely say something like, my straw has a hole in it. The use of the singular article A in that sentence implies that, were it not for said small round hole, that there would be no holes in the straw. Therefore, we can conclude that a fully functioning straw has no holes. And it's right there that I go, William, that's not how that...
No, what you've concluded, what you think you've concluded is that, but what you've actually concluded is that you associate with morons.
Don't have a go at him. He's clearly some kind of linguist. Maybe he's teaching English out there. He says, whilst English is a famously descriptive language, i.e. if something is wrong but can still be understood, it is considered non-standard. I would argue that the first statement is the standard one, and therefore a straw has no holes. I've just gone back to work after 6 months off and I finally got my linguistic brain switched back on. Were we speaking in a linguistic fashion or a scientific fashion? I think we may have been erring on the side of the second. But Will, in Beijing, stay safe, look after yourself. Thank you. I enjoyed that email.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed the email. I enjoyed the idea that, you know, the semantics of like Chomsky or the you know, Wittgenstein saying that, I think effectively saying that you can't feel something that you're not able to articulate. Like if you can't articulate it, then does it really exist? That kind of, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, that kind of stuff is interesting, but I don't think just because one of his mates says a phrase, it proves anything. That's what I'm getting at.
If someone is at a garden party and he sees a man waving a pressure washer around about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, spraying beer off a patio, a cement patio, how do you articulate your feelings there? You know,
yeah,
confusion.
Some people just don't have the language, do they?
Exactly, they wouldn't have the language or the wherewithal to be able to explain it.
But do you understand what I mean? Like for example, it's quite an interesting sort of area of discussion, that if your brain has never learned the words to articulate a feeling you may have, it becomes hugely problematic, right? Because you can't tell anyone what you're feeling because there's no words to describe it. And so that area of discussion is like really interesting in principle, because you would just think that we are born with all these universal things that affect all of us, and then we just tell people about them when we need to. But if we can't, then we can't. You can describe it, but it might not be accurate.
Do you not sort of read a book quite a lot and hear a feeling or a sense or something you've thought in the past being explained in a beautiful articulate way, and you go, oh, this person's amazing. But they're amazing because they're describing something that you've experienced in your past and you've never really thought to give it a word.
Yeah, I think that's always a really enlightening and interesting situation. And I just finished a really interesting bit, which I'll come on to in a minute, but without trying to installing a downturn into the show, I don't mean this to kind of bring the mood down, but very, very briefly, I can remember feeling as a teenager things that I now recognise as probably as depression, But at the time, I didn't know that. Like, I just had no frame of reference, and I would attribute it to other kind of quite trivial things. And so what I mean is, and I don't mean to, you know, I'm not trying to canvass sympathy or anything like that. I'm just trying to illustrate that that is a very small and quite inconsequential example of what I'm talking about. Now I have the tools to understand, identify, and actually articulate some of the stuff I mean. And people have heard me articulate on this show for years, and let's be honest, it's not that pretty. Imagine what it was like 20 years ago. So I think particularly when you get to other cultures and other areas of the world that perhaps have a completely different outlook on things to us, it would manifest itself in a number of different ways. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, massively.
Yeah, and the book I was going to talk about that I finished on Saturday was a book by Robert Harris called Selling Hitler, about the fraudulent Hitler diaries that manifested themselves in the 80s.
Yeah.
Have you heard that story?
It's a mad story.
Was
the Daily Mail taken in Britain?
It was the Sunday Times. The Rupert Murdoch-owned Sunday Times in the UK. But essentially, for those listening who aren't aware of the story, I'd recommend you go and read it, because you're interested in like the intersection between kind of history and how the media works and how the human mind works. It's a fascinating example, because
people wanting to believe something.
Yeah. basic stuff being continually overlooked just because they wanted it
it's
to be true
story.
because of what they would have got out of it. And it was essentially all just being fraudulently created by some guy in a shop in some part of Germany, and it passed so many different tests. Like, the one thing that's really brought to bear and has a lot of question marks hanging over it, as far as I understand, is the art of studying handwriting and how subjective it is.
Mm.
Because this guy, was doing like fraudulent Adolf Hitler handwriting, and it passed, I think, 3 or 4 well-versed handwriting checks by experts.
Right. But it is that thing. But it's that thing going, oh, maybe he was just having it. Because it is subjective. Or maybe he'd hurt his hand that day. Or maybe he was just having an off day. Maybe his S's were just a little bit longer than he... Oh, he loved an S.
No, one of them, Pete, one of them said that... Because I think, and I'm not an expert on this at all, but I think that... it's widely accepted that for the last few years of his life, Hitler was suffering from Parkinson's disease.
Right.
And so his handwriting was affected by that, they would say. But he famously, part of the reason it was such a big scoop was because he never really wrote anything down. And so people thought they had the completely wrong impression of him. But actually what has happened, he had produced 60 volumes of these handwritten diaries. And the one of the handwriting experts was saying, yeah, you can see from how his handwriting has deteriorated over the years, that he was definitely suffering from this. The person who wrote this was definitely suffering from some kind of illness, which was further circumstantial evidence that he had actually written them. And it's just some bloke diaries. By the way, mate, just some bloke knocking off diaries, the paper and the binding of which he just bought in the local shop in like the 80s. it's staggering how far it went. It cost the publishing company, I think, something like 10 or 11 million marks at the time.
Brilliant.
Incredible fraudulent activity. It's a fascinating story.
Very enjoyable.
I've got an email here.
I mean, to be honest, nowadays, anybody fraudulently writing Hitler's diary, it'd probably be quite big on YouTube, to be quite frank.
Well, that's the frightening thing.
Find them now.
The frightening thing is about that, reading that in a 2020 context, the sheer... it makes you think like nothing's changed. So almost 40 years later, the willingness of people to essentially put the idea that they want something to be true over and above the facts of the matter is obviously there for everyone to witness in modern times, right? So, the guy who was being the kind of conduit between the fraudster and the main publications that were interested was this kind of quite eccentric journalist who had long suspected of being a bit too close to these surviving Nazis in Germany in the 80s, and who had, to say the least, and to who kind of, you know what it reminded me of? Have you seen the film ID?
No.
So basically, a guy goes undercover as a football hooligan, and to cut a long story short, I'm not going to apologise for spoilers because it was in the 80s, the film was made, he essentially becomes one of them. And it's a bit like that with this guy, essentially. But it's a fascinating story. It's called Selling Hitler by Robert Harris. I'd recommend it. It's a really easy read. It'll take you a couple of days if you get into it. And it's well worth reading. Just, it's, I think, quite an underplayed part of essentially the biggest media scandal probably of that time, particularly in that area. So, and a lot of big hitting names involved and being duped by it. I mean, Murdoch obviously didn't give a shit because he didn't cost him any money and he got a huge amount of circulation out of it. He's obviously completely shameless on that front.
That's their business model, isn't it?
Yeah.
From Pizzagate to, you know, whatever the hell's going to be happening in the next election, from the, you know, Russian and Chinese deep fakes and all the bollocks that's going to come along. They'll run them because at the end of the day, we all find out that it's not true, or we all find out that the video or the audio has been doctored in 2020, and then we'll go, oh well, that was exciting for a bit, and no one will get in trouble for it.
The genie's out of the bottle.
Yeah.
Well, apparently there's only three quotes that Rupert Murdoch has ever been on record as making around the Hitler diary scandal, and they are as follows:
Struth, mate.
No, yeah, Ridley Dinks was one of them. no, it was they are as follows: nothing ventured, nothing gained. That's the first one.
Right,
number two is, after
that
all,
that was also Hitler's motto.
Yeah. Number two is, after all, we are in the entertainment business.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And number three is, circulation went up and it stayed up. We didn't lose money or anything like that. So he didn't give a shit.
No, of course he doesn't. None of them do. And it's kind of, I mean, the newspaper empresarios, not the Australians. Get your hands off my diary.
Yeah. Mate, I've got one more quick email we'll squeeze in before we go. It is by Australian man, Ray Dixon. There we go.
Oh, Ray-do.
He says, firstly, thanks for mentioning the Dicky Power battery on the show, especially as I was so behind the curve on that. He likes a Dicky Power battery. Good for him. Mm. He says, secondly, I don't want to be greedy, but I've got another tidbit of information for you. In your most recent episode, A Friendship of Mountains, which was the Tuesday episode last week, he said, you mentioned the Ibis hotel chain. Mm. I believe this is a reference to the Ibis bird, and I believe you're correct to pronounce it Ibis. So what he's saying is the hotel chain is named after a bird. Weirdly, down in Australia, where I'm from, the Australian white Ibis is known as the bin chicken.
Oh, no.
The bin chicken, mate, is usually found rummaging through bins in cities looking for food. Even stranger, despite making a mess and being generally annoying, they've actually become a bit of an underdog hero in Australian pop culture, with bin chicken tattoos, crowd-funded inflatable bin chicken pool toys, street art featuring bin chickens, and a brilliant but also awful David Attenborough-style mockumentary, which is attached to the YouTube channel. Maybe it's fitting that the Ibis hotel chain chose that name. It's in the Australian bird of the year 2017 poll. Yes, that's a thing. The bin chicken came second after the Australian magpie, which will, during the whole of spring, aggressively swoop and attack people anywhere even remotely near its nest. I think we probably drink too much down here. Keep up the good work, Ray. So the bin chicken is the second most popular bird in Australia, as per a 2017 poll, also known as the Ibis, which the hotel chain is named after. I thought that was quite interesting.
Enjoyable. Got lovely, lovely long beaks. Perfect for bin dipping, isn't it?
Looks like a sickle, doesn't it, the beak?
Mmm. Yeah, they'd make a perfect death character.
Would you be as keen to... So here's one for you, MP. If you had to stay on an Ibis again...
Yeah.
And it was, say, 50 the quid hotel. A night, right?
Right.
Would you accept staying there for free, but for the whole night you had to share the room with an Ibis?
It might just sort of... You never know with an Ibis. It could just probably just rest, I guess, and sleep.
But would you be able to relax?
No, because it would peck my eyes out. It'd probably think my eyes were some two delicious eels or something, like something delicious.
Bag it straight in the bathroom, shut the door, you saved yourself 50 quid.
I reckon I'd kill an ibis. I mean, yeah.
That's not part of it. You just snap its neck in the first minute you're in there.
I would just rubber band its wings and beak and maybe sedate it.
It's a lot of hassle, isn't it?
Yeah. No.
I don't think you should be putting a rubber band around birds' beaks.
Become friends with it and romance it and spend my night that way.
Bit of dancing and romancing.
Bit of dancing and romancing. A bit of Netflix and Bill. Hey? This has been the Local Pete Show. We've got to get out of here because that is an idea and also possibly...
I think that's one of the funniest things you've ever said.
Yeah. Cheers, mate. If you want to get to with the show, as always, it's hello at lukeandpeteshow.com. We'll be back on Thursday for this shite from one bin chicken to another. We'll see you very soon.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.